The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Oh, good morning again, everyone. Warm greetings to all of you, especially those who slipped in a few minutes late. I'm delighted to be back with you for this fifth of five teachings. Fifth of five teachings on inner and interpersonal wellsprings of Dharma well-being. This week's theme is on cultivating these qualities. And they're in the context of the Buddha often gave teachings to all kinds of people, but occasionally would give teachings about how to practice when things weren't going so great in the outer world. And gave the teaching of coming home to the practice, staying home in the practice, making the practice our field of influence and our refuge. And in this teaching that I'm describing this week, he talked about five benefits, wellsprings of well-being that get cultivated this way. Sort of an inner sense of spiritual empowerment, true inner beauty, happiness, inner wealth or heart wealth, and this last one that we're covering today, freedom. So, freedom, liberation, is freedom from any trace of mental affliction, any trace of greed, hatred, delusion, ignorance in the heart and mind. No more fuel for that internal optional kind of suffering. I'll talk more about that later. And it's freedom from causing intentional harm. Any experience of freedom, of the heart letting go, metabolized carefully, can be onward leading in the path towards awakening. Onward leading. And can make for a much happier life. So in this teaching, the Buddha talks about two sort of ways the heart becomes free. And a fully awakened person has experienced both of these. The first is freedom by wisdom, freedom by knowledge, deep wisdom and knowledge. And the second is freedom by meditative death and the meditative deepness. The Pali for these are Panya Vimutti, wisdom awakening, and Chetto Vimutti, heart awakening. Now, the second can be temporary or permanent. In any case, it's powerful, nourishing. It resets an internal set point or reference point for the rest of life. Ah, this is possible. So I've talked about empowerment the first day, spiritual power. The Buddha really considered this freedom, this liberation of the heart and mind to be the most consequential form of power. All the good qualities we've covered this week help contribute to it. And a sort of unpack this topic a little more, speak to it. I have one more story from the time of the Buddha. And this is a story of two good friends, Atisa, and I think his name was Kovala, something like that. And in ancient India, they were born within a day or two to families in neighboring villages. And the families had already been friends. So it's that beautiful thing. Many of you have experienced this if you have kids, where your kids' friends become friends, or your parents were friends when you were born. And so you've been friends with this person your whole life. And it's a special kind of friendship. So they grew up together. They went off riding horses together, swimming in creeks, going to forests. And they were both in their own spheres, their own villages, very popular and well-liked. So they went to a festival one day as young men, maybe adolescents, together. And it was a 3-day festival. And the first day was wonderful and they had a lot of fun. And it was great, like folk music and entertainment and plays and tricks and all that kind of stuff. So they signed up for the second and the third day. But the second day, they were both kind of less into it. And then that night, each of them in their own beds had sort of difficult nights of tossing and turning. And it turns out that when they went back that third day, they were much more, each was much more withdrawn and pensive. And Atisa was having these thoughts of, well, death is universal. Why are we spending our time doing this when we could be finding a way to completely end suffering, to know the truth of life before we're gone? Classic, classic kind of young person wisdom, young person seeking. So he notices that his friend is also pensive and asks, well, we are withdrawn. What's up with you? And wouldn't you know, his friend Kovala said the same thing. And I'm like, oh, we're of the same mind. We should leave these villages and go off and find a good teacher and find a way to really understand the meaning of life, break through our suffering, discover freedom. And so they did. And as the story goes, around the time they did this was around the time that the Buddha to be was getting married, still in his household life. And it was years before he left, the Buddha left and became a teacher, brought his son into the order. And so they wandered around and were finding teachers and not satisfied with any of them. Eventually, they found one teacher who was brilliant with knowledge and skepticism and analysis. And he really taught them to critically look at what they were learning, empirically look at it. But he didn't have any of the deeper teachings. And so they learned a lot from him, but were becoming dissatisfied, realizing that they really hadn't come to a full understanding. And so they went on and searched out still other teachers and other teachers. And then one day, Atisa is off asking for his food for the day in the neighborhood when he encounters a fully awakened man. And he was immediately struck by this person's presence, the calm, the stillness that radiated from him, the sense of peace. And after they had both gotten their meal, he bowed down to him and said, "Who is your teacher? What have you learned? You've clearly learned something, and I want to learn it." And this monk was a little bit shy and maybe a little bit skeptical of the newcomer's intentions. People often challenged themselves and each other in those days. But he told him the teachings of the Buddha in brief, just like four stanzas or something, and then told him who his teacher was and where his teacher was. And upon hearing those four stanzas, something in Atisa's heart just opened up. And he knew this is it, this is the way. There was a deeper understanding, a miniature, significant awakening in him. So he went and found his friend and told him, and they went to see the Buddha and joined a kind of a cohort of incoming practitioners. And because they had been so dedicated for years, even decades, and had such keen powers of some kind of mental analysis and understanding and meditation, both of them became fully awakened pretty quickly. And the Buddha, recognizing their capacity, made them his two primary assistants of the order. So that was an honor, but it was also a lot of work. You got to kind of run the Sangha, a lot of administrative, interpersonal stuff, and they also helped him teach. And these two men were Sariputta and Mahamoggallana. Those of you who are familiar with the ancient teachings are familiar with them already. I'm telling this story in part because of the importance of spiritual friendship as you're mucking along on the path. And in part because these two people exemplify two different expressions of liberation. While they both woke up both ways through wisdom and through meditative depth, Sariputta was much more of a wisdom type. He became a great systematizer, a lot of details. He was kind of like that day's version of a software engineer or an information architect, highly logical, rational. Whereas Mahamoggallana was extraordinarily skilled in meditative subtlety, subtlety of the inner workings of the mind, of meditative depth, of different states. And Sariputta tended to bring people into the first beginnings of awakening, the first levels of it. And Mahamoggallana tended to train the more advanced practitioners in depth. So, those are a couple of examples of expression of freedom. I think you can maybe get a sense of their different personality. And there are others. The nun Namadina in the Buddha's time was eloquent, unsurpassed in her eloquence among the women, foremost in teaching, especially of lay people. And her Dharma sister, Patachara, exemplified and modeled this inner beauty that just shone from her in this dedication to virtue. Excuse me. And she became the foremost instructor of new nuns, had quite a following. So it can take many forms of expression, this awakening. I've heard stories of awakened people in the Saigon Hills of Burma from colleagues and friends of mine. And one exemplifies utter peace and just radiates it to the point where it's palpable, even walking into his space. And another was happy and light and joyful. All of these are dimensions of the free heart. So again, this liberation is freedom from being impacted by affliction, from the life-denying forces that can come to us through society, our own inner, more primitive urges, our upbringing. It's freedom to respond with clarity, without reactivity to whatever life brings. Not to make things worse for self, others, or anyone. It's freedom to be okay, to flourish in any circumstances at all. So to recap, this kind of freedom is what the Buddha considered the most potent form of power. And this week, all of these other good qualities we've covered feed into that, nourish that capacity for the heart's freedom. And each glimpse, metabolized, can be onward leading. All of them together represent a kind of efficacy in life, a healthy spiritual lifespan. So whether you're cultivating spiritual empowerment, of healthy desire, energy, heart qualities, engagement, willpower, virtue, samadhi, or moments of freedom. It's all onward leading. Each contributes to joy, connection, self-sufficiency, and peace. So, your assignment over the weekend, should you choose to take it, is to notice moments in your life when your heart feels free, not entangled, and metabolize it, each moment, be nourished by it, and if you like, share it with your friends. Thank you so much for your kind attention. It's been an absolute joy being with you this week. May all beings be free.